Good morning. Well, it was a long reading, one of many to come. So welcome to episode one of our Joseph summer series. It's a very well-known Old Testament historical narrative, and it covers chapters 37 to 50 of Genesis. 13 chapters, I think my math says that is. Very long indeed. You may experience a feeling of slight relief this morning to know that we're only covering chapter 37 this morning. But archaeology, you know, has shown that the detail of this historical narrative is very accurate, and that it was clearly written by those who were there at the time, because of all the particular words that are used that can only have been known at that time. So as we get underway, let's first just review a bit of background about what we're talking about this morning. Jacob, who was the big daddy, if you like, and Joseph, who we're really thinking about this morning, were around about 1800 years before Jesus was born, or getting on to 4,000 years ago now. That was at the end of what we call the Bronze Age and the beginning of the Iron Age. So they were only just starting to use knives and forks made of iron, as opposed to bronze, you could say. Okay, so you just started eating your tea off iron instead of bronze. Joseph was the son of Jacob. And Jacob was the descendant of Abraham. Okay. Joseph had 11 other brothers. I'm going to read them out to you, and then you can repeat them back to me later. So we have Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin. You got that? And of course, Joseph. 12 brothers. And the family lived in the land that later became known as Israel, but at that time was known as the land of Canaan. And this family, at this time, were nomads. Okay? So they had lived in a great tent like the Bedouins do, and then they went and grazed their herds as far and wide as they could to find pasture. And that's what the people of Israel were like at this time. But God clearly had big plans for Jacob and his family. Because in time, the descendants of these 12 sons of Jacob generated, more or less anyway, the 12 tribes of Israel and the whole nation. So God had promised Abraham he would have huge numbers of descendants. He would have the people of God, the people of Israel. But God's plan to achieve that heavily depended on Joseph. And this was going to mean that there's only one way to achieve this, and God was going to have to heavily bless Joseph and his family through him. Now Joseph was, as the reading told us, if you can remember, only 17, or just 17, or really 17, however you want to look at it, depending on what age you are. But out of all of Jacob's sons, Joseph was the favourite. And Jacob made sure that all the rest of the family knew that Joseph was the special favorite son of his old age. And he gave him this special multicolored coat. Very pleased to see John had a very special shirt on this morning. In just for this reading, really. Multicolored in many ways. And Jacob was a key figure in the Old Testament. Okay? So he had this favoritism for Joseph, but he was a key figure in the Old Testament. He was what you would call in the Old Testament, like Abraham and Isaac, Jacob was a patriarch. Okay? Jacob met with God on one occasion at what became famously known as the Stairway to Heaven, at a place called Bethel, where God was at the top and he was at the bottom and the angels were going up and down in a dream. Jacob wrestled with God physically at a brook called Kidron. Jacob was a man who was well acquainted with the living God. But despite all of this, Jacob was completely clueless when it came to his sons and to his family. So instead of making sure that the firstborn son, Reuben, was honored as the firstborn son, because he was his key heir, and as the law and custom of the time demanded, should be given that honor as the key heir, and who would inherit 2/3 of the estate of his father, and was in charge of all the other brothers, and would be in charge of the family when Jacob died. He didn't honor him. He honored his younger son. And in doing so, clueless Jacob created instant jealousy amongst all his sons and hatred of his younger son. And Joseph, for his part, did a great job living up to this as a favorite in the family and antagonizing his brothers. And of course, this was all compounded by the dreams that God gave to Joseph, which perhaps then he naively, you could say, shared with his brothers and family and his father. It seems that God blessed Joseph with a special gift of dreams that told the future, but also how to interpret those dreams of others. But this blessing was going to lead Joseph to many places of pain and anguish. Perhaps not what you might think would arise from a blessing of God. And Joseph's first dream of the sheaves of corn really riled his brothers, didn't it? It showed them all bowing down to him, the youngest brother. And when he told them about it, they showed their annoyance. "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Real family unity going on there. Joseph had a second dream of the sun and the moon and the 11 stars. It had all his brothers and his father and his mother bowing down to him. Even his dad, Jacob, was unimpressed by this dream. "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. And of course, that is exactly what does happen eventually, many years forward. Joseph, it seems, was blessed by God with these dreams of the future, and yet completely naive and seemingly unaware of the hatred and jealousy this caused in his brothers. This blessing of God had given to Joseph, this blessing God had given to Joseph, was now about to lead to Joseph and to some real life changes, you could say. But not the way you might expect from a blessing from God to pan out. Because Jacob and the family were living in Hebron, which is down in the south of Israel by the Dead Sea. And Jacob sent Joseph, again, probably a bit naively, because he was only a 17-year-old guy, he sent him 50 miles north to where the herds were being grazed by his brothers at Shechem. And I don't think Joseph had ever been 50 miles north on his own before. But that's where he sent him. And as it turned out, his brothers had gone on a further 20 miles to a place called Dothan. And Dothan was just near one of the main roads that went down the Mediterranean coast of Israel all the way to Egypt. "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. It would have taken Joseph several days to get up there. It was 70 miles of walking to do. He must have spent many days travelling before eventually, after guidance from a strange man in a field, it seems that he managed to find his brothers near Dothan. But unfortunately for Joseph, his brothers saw him approaching from enough distance to form a plot to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns, and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." Again, God's blessing of dreams on Joseph was leading him deeper into the hatred of his brothers. Yet, as Joseph tells his brothers many years later in Egypt, "This was all in God's plan to save his people and to grow them into a nation." Joseph, however, at this point, had a slight ally in his oldest brother, Reuben, who persuaded the other brothers just not quite to kill Joseph, but simply throw him in a cistern. Now, a cistern in that part of the world is basically a bottle-shaped sort of thing dug into the ground, into the rock. So you've got a thin neck and a big sort of inside. So once you've been chucked in, there's no way of getting out unless somebody pulls you out with a rope up the thin neck. And that's where they put Joseph. And these would have been used to store water, these cisterns. But seemingly this one was empty. So Reuben was hoping to rescue Joseph and return him later to his father. However, Reuben's plan, though well-intentioned, was not what God had in store for Joseph. Because Dothan, unfortunately for Joseph, was on the main road to Egypt along the Mediterranean coast, the main trade route used by the Ishmaelites, who regularly travelled up and down the road with all sorts of goods, including slaves. And the Egyptians had built protective forts along that road to make sure that everything went smoothly for the traders. This was the road that would take Joseph into Egypt. And one of his brothers, Judah, persuaded the others not to let Joseph die in the cistern, but to sell him into slavery. So they sold him for what was then 20 shekels to the Ishmaelite traders heading into Egypt. And we know from archaeology that 20 shekels was indeed, at that time, the going rate for a male slave. So it's an accurate account. God had blessed Joseph with his life, you could say. And perhaps he's blessed him, strangely, with a new life direction. Yet at the time, no one saw God's hand at work here, and certainly not Joseph. Imagine what it was like for Joseph to be sold as a slave by your own brothers, your own family. How would you see God's hand in that? And certainly his brothers had no idea that God was at work behind the scenes here. And yet, as the story pans out, as the family get into Egypt, this was clearly all God's plan for his people. And the brothers had to cover up their crime. It seems that Reuben was not around when Joseph was sold to the Ishmaelites and was distraught when he found out. Because as number one son, he was the one who was going to have to explain Joseph's disappearance to his father. But the brothers found a way to do this, to explain Joseph's disappearance. They'd already stripped that multicoloured coat off Joseph, which they hated as much as Joseph himself, as it symbolised his father's favouritism. They got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. And they took the ornate robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it's your son's robe." Can you imagine that going on? Sort of dangling this thing in front of Jacob and saying, "Well, that's all we've got left of Joseph. Is it your son's?" It's sort of like, well, obviously it is, because you gave it him. When Jacob received this blood-stained robe, he was, of course, completely devastated. And he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave." So his father wept for him. And I think this put Jacob into depression for many years when you read the continuing text. Meanwhile, Joseph had started his journey, the journey of God's people to Egypt, a place where God's people would be safe, actually, from famine and war, and a place where they would grow ultimately into a nation. Joseph was sold in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. A bit like being sold to a high-ranking person in the American government today. You know, you couldn't have been sold into a better family, if you like. You know, a rich family with big estates and so on, where you could prove yourself a high official in Egypt. So who would have thought that the blessing of God on Joseph in the gift of dreams and their interpretation would lead to such a life journey for Joseph, to such hatred and jealousy amongst his brothers, and to many years of grieving for his father Jacob? And yet all this was in God's plan for his people, a plan of salvation that led ultimately to Jesus. So Joseph's journey shows that the blessing of God is not a guaranteed and easy road. God's blessing leads to his presence, but it also leads to our service and the investment of ourselves in his kingdom. But sometimes this can be a hard road, requiring us to simply place our trust in him, whatever the circumstances of life may seemingly deliver. God's blessing can start difficult journeys. Like Joseph, we often cannot see God's big picture. We are God's people, yet following him can bring a lot of life-challenging circumstances amongst our families, our friends, and often our own lives. Joseph had no clue he was walking in God's huge plan of salvation until it was revealed as his brothers and fathers eventually came to Egypt with their whole household. God's plan for his kingdom amongst us is often similarly obscured. And God often only reveals his work at the end of our journeys, at the end of whatever journey it is. And like Joseph, we must live and walk in faith that God always arrives at our life destinations before us and is there ready to direct us and to take charge. We must live in faith and faithfulness to God our Father, trusting that wherever our kingdom journeys lead us, that is the place God has prepared for us as a people and a church. We are all part of God's plan, and we are all part of God's journey of salvation. Amen.